G'day, everyone. How you doing? My name is Dylan. I really appreciate and grateful that you all came to join us here today to learn a few things. I guess I'm doing my own introduction, which is kind of weird. So I thought, in order to introduce myself, I'm just going to play a video. As I said, I really appreciate the opportunity to come share my story with you all today. Now, this right here is a photo of myself when I was 13 years old. I know what you're thinking, Dylan. Mate. Where the fuck are your eyebrows? Unfortunately for me, I didn't grow eyebrows until I was about 18 years old. I got a pretty average haircut, probably just worse than the one I'm rocking today. I'm overweight, I got braces, and although I'm smiling in this photo, it's probably the first time in my life that I was really insecure about my disability. Up until this point, I'd never really cared about the fact that I was in a wheelchair, but when I reached this age, everything became different, and it really started dictating everything that I could achieve. So today I want to take you on a short journey back to the start of my life and show you how I was able to overcome those insecurities and turn into the happy person that I am today, and also share a few of my unwritten ground rules that govern my life that hopefully you can all take into your professional and personal lives as well to make our society a more inclusive place. Good plan? Great. Tough shit if it's not. 40 more minutes. But I suppose you can just leave. It's South by Southwest, so that's up to you. Also, I'll leave a little bit of time to do some questions at the end. If you've got any questions, as you can tell, I'm a pretty laid-back customer. You can ask me whatever you want, but if you get to ask me questions, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions as we go along. So please get involved. All right, let's get into it. Now, as you can probably tell, I'm in a wheelchair. Anyone notice? Kind of hard to hide, isn't it? So I've been in a wheelchair my whole life. I was born with a tumour wrapped around my spinal cord. So if you take a small melon, chop that melon in half, stick half of it on your back, that's how I was born. And when I was a couple days old, the surgeon decided to remove that tumour in order to save my life. But in doing so, when they cut it out, it damaged my spinal cord. As a result, leaving me a paraplegic. Spent the first 3.5 years of my life pretty much exclusively in hospital. I was born and then I didn't get out until I was 8 months old. I had 11 operations in 8 months to save my life. And then after those 8 months, my parents got a call. Great news, Dylan is finally well enough to go home. So hands up, anyone got kids? Fair few. Imagine how good that feeling was, yeah? Getting to take your son home for the very first time. So I got to go home for about 36 hours. And then one of my kidneys failed and I went back into hospital for another 3.5 months. And I think one of the only reasons I made it out of hospital and into the person that I am today, apart from good doctors, is I've got an incredible family. I've got amazing parents who were by my side every single night in hospital. Or so they say. As you can tell, they're not in the fucking photo, are they? Where are they? They could have been getting pissed in Hawaii for all I care. But I guess I'll take their word for it. And I got an awesome big brother, Zach, who's easily my best mate in the whole world. But to be honest with you, he wasn't always my best mate. Growing up, we had cable TV and we used to always fight over the TV remote as to who got to choose what they wanted to watch on television. Now, Zach is what we call able-bodied, meaning he can run a lot faster than I can. So he'd get up on his feet, run down the hallway, get in the lounge room first, pick up the control for the TV, thus having the power. Now, I cannot tell you how much this used to shit me, all right? So I'd wait for Zach to go to the bathroom. I'd crawl over to the couch. I'd pick up the control, and then the power for the TV will be mine. But after a while, Zach realized what I was doing. So whenever he got up to go to the bathroom, he'd get the TV remote. He'd walk into the kitchen. He'd put it on top of the fridge where I couldn't reach it. I know, what a jerk. Go to the bathroom. Picked up the TV, kept watching whatever he wanted, like nothing had ever happened. Now, I'll tell you that story. Do you think it was a good thing or a bad thing that my brother Zach used to do that? What do you reckon, good or bad? Who said good? Hand up. Why was it a good thing? Loved it. Challenged me for sure. Anyone else? Yeah, resourceful. Just a brother. You all nailed it. You're all great. I suppose you're all smart. You're at South by Southwest. You all nailed it. It would have been very easy for Zach to go, you know what, I feel sorry for my poor, sick, disabled brother Dylan, who's never going to be able to walk. I'm going to simply give him whatever he wants. And I think a lot of people, especially young people with disability, are wrapped in cotton wool for that reason, because we are different and society often sees difference as a bad thing. But my brother Zach thought, stuff that. I could not care less that he's in a wheelchair. I'm going to treat him like I would any other little brother. And it made me realize, even though my brother cared for me, he loved me, he also pushed me to be my own person. And if my brother didn't care that I was in a wheelchair, then why should I care that I was in a wheelchair? So I went to primary school, we call it in Australia, elementary school. I was like every other kid. I loved playing sport, loved playing football, but I was more of a stepladder than a participant because jumping, not one of my strengths. And I was fine. I actually didn't really care too much about the fact that I had a disability. But when I reached high school, when I was about 13, 14, 15, everything became different. I couldn't keep up with my friends as much. They also became a little less patient as well. I also developed a few nicknames. People used to call me the cripple or the spastic everywhere that I went. The cripple's here, where's the spastic? And I hate those words. They got a real negative connotation that you are broken, less capable. And they're words that used to get used to describe people with disability, people like me, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even the early 2000s. And they're words that some of us might accidentally still say today. Or how many beers did you have at Mohawk at South by Southwest? Mate, I was spastic, or whatever it is. And these words hurt. And unfortunately for me, I started believing them. And I became really embarrassed about the fact that I had a disability. I sat at home for 2 years of my life, eating junk food, playing video games, embarrassed to leave the house because I wasn't proud of the person that I was. And yeah, it ruined my life. It really did. And I thought it was never going to, I thought I was never ever going to get over it. And the biggest regret that I ever had was in those 2 years, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my brother. I didn't tell my family because I felt like a burden. I felt like an embarrassment on my family. And this is when I first found out about the power of vulnerability, the power in asking for help, the power in saying, I'm not okay if you ever need anybody to support you. And it was the best decision that I ever made. And my brother, I told my brother Zach, and he gave me one bit of advice, which was to be bold. I think it's important in life to put yourself out there and good things tend to happen. I'm a firm believer in life. You make your own luck by putting yourself in situations you might not feel too comfortable in. I remember a mate of mine, he was having a party, a house party. We were like 15 years old, and as usual, I didn't get invited. I was like, that's crap. So I decided I was going to invite myself, all right? So I said to my brother Zach, who's a bit of a smart ass, or a smart ass, if you're in America, I said, what do you and your friends do if you don't get invited to a party? He said, we just jump over the fence. Solid advice for your paraplegic brother. But he drove me there. He said, just turn up, see what happens. So I knocked on the door. My mate opened the door and he had this shocked look on his face. And he said, Dill, I'm sorry. We don't, you know, I thought to myself, Dylan, why did you come? You're an idiot. And he said, Dill, I'm sorry we don't invite you places. I've got two stairs to get into my house, just like that down here. I didn't know if you'd be able to get in. Now I can get up, you know, two stairs with a bit of help like that. And what I found was my mates didn't hate me because I was different. They were actually just embarrassed to talk about my disability with me. They didn't know if I needed a carer, could go to the bathroom by myself. They had no idea. But more important than that, I was embarrassed to talk about my disability with them. I used to shy away from those conversations because I wasn't proud of the person that I was. And I realized as soon as I started talking about it more, it actually normalized it for everybody else. So from that day on, I decided to never let my disability get in the way of anything that I wanted to do ever again. And yeah, it changed my life. It really did. I got a lot happier, a lot more confident. And it pushed me towards one of my true passions in life, which is playing Paralympic sport. So I started playing wheelchair tennis when I was about 11 years old. That's me in the Davis Cup in the top left corner. I clearly thought it was a cake because I'm pretty happy. Tried to eat it afterwards. And wheelchair basketball when I was about 15. Now, ever since I was a kid, all I wanted to do was go to the Paralympic Games. Does everyone know what the Paralympic Games is? Yep, everyone nodding. What is it? As soon as you say, what is it? Everyone's too scared to say what it is. Let's say it together. It's the Olympic Games for people with a? You're allowed to say that word. The reason you think disability is a bad word or a slur is the negative stigma society places upon it. But that's what I am, yeah? I'm disabled, and that's what it is. The Olympics are people with a disability. But I bet you don't know what the word actually means. If you do, don't scream it out. The word is split in half. The Olympic part, which represents the Olympics, the pinnacle of sport, and the para part. Now, what's the first thing that comes into your head when you think of the para in Paralympic? Would it be paraplegic or paralyzed? I thought it was that too when I went, so don't feel bad. Does anyone know what it is? Yes. The para, what's your name? Lex, you nailed it. It's the parallel Olympics. I mean, the Olympics and the Paralympics run parallel or alongside one another, around the same time, same country, same sports stars, fighting for the same gold medals. The only difference is, at the Paralympics, everyone has a disability, and he's better looking as well, and more marketable as ambassadors for sponsors. If anyone needs me, I'm available, all right? So, for me, that dream was realised when I got to play wheelchair basketball at the Beijing Paralympic Games when I was the ripe old age of 17 years old, still in high school. Now, heading into the tournament, we were ranked number 3 in the world. The United States, they were number 2. And the Canadian wheelchair basketball team was number 1 in the world. Now, is there anyone from Canada in the house? Any Canadians? All right, good. I just want to put into perspective how much I hate Canada, all right? So these Canadian jerks, right, they had lost 2 games of basketball, 2 matches total in 10 years of competition. They won the 2004 gold medal. They were unbelievable, right? The best team of all time. And whatever we did, we just could not beat them. And I just can't put into words how much we hated them, all right? So we got to the tournament. We played our first game against the Brazilian wheelchair basketball team. Now, this wheelchair that I'm sitting in today, it's called Rove Wheelchairs. It is a 3D printed titanium carbon wheelchair. Pretty cool, yeah? Technology is advancing. It weighs about 3 kilos without any wheels on it. Pretty amazing. They range from about $10,000 to $15,000, right? But the technology is advancing so much, so you can perform at your best. When I was playing basketball that day in Beijing, see, these wheelchairs have a bit of an angled on them. That's called camber, so you can turn it a bit faster. They're about $20,000. The wheelchair that I used in my last ever tennis match was a full carbon fiber mold of my body, the same way Lewis Hamilton would have a carbon mold of his body in his F1 car. They're worth about $50,000 to $60,000. Pretty expensive, yeah. So I'm in like a Ferrari of wheelchairs, right? Now, we're playing Brazil. Has anyone been to a hospital before or maybe the airport? You know those big, crappy wheelchairs you get? You know those big, heavy chairs? Brazil, which sucked, unfortunately, were playing in wheelchairs like that, right? So we were like in a Ferrari of wheelchairs. They were like in a 1962 shitty Toyota, right, with like 3 flat tires. So how do you think we thought we were going to go? Pretty good. Half time, we're down by 21 points. They had this one dude that hit 7 3-pointers in the first half. And I honestly thought Michael Jordan had an illegitimate Brazilian love child who then got run over by a train or something, lost his legs, and then was playing wheelchair basketball because this guy was on fire, okay? Anyway, we're down by 21 points. And heading into the tournament, I was 17. The next youngest on my team was 24. So I didn't think I was going to play very much. Also, my coach, he used to call me Illen with no D, because I didn't play defense. Get it? Illen. No, oh, you like that one? Yeah, laugh it up, everyone. When you're down by 21 points, who the hell needs defense? So he threw me on, hit a couple of shots. We started pegging them back, pegging them back, pegging them back. We're down by 11 at three-quarter time. We got a bit closer again. And then with 1 second to go, our captain, a guy called Brad Ness, see the big guy on the end, number 15? He threw up the ugliest basketball shot you've ever seen in your life. The ball went around the ring once, round twice, round a third time, and the ball went in with 0.01 of a second to go. And we won that game by 1 point. And after that match, we got this feeling like it was our time to do something special. So I went through the whole tournament, smashed everybody, got to the semi-final, we played the USA, pumped them, sorry if you're from America, but always fun. Got to the final, who do you think we played? Bloody Canada. We're down by 6 points at halftime, but our coach at halftime, he said 3 things to us. 2 of them he said all the time for 4 years. I was like, mate, I get it. 1, the process takes care of the result. And 2, the only thing you can worry about is what you can control. Stop worrying about them. And the third thing, which sounds really counterintuitive as an athlete, he said, we are in a gold medal match representing our country. This should be one of the best moments of our lives. Not one of us had smiled once. He said, go out there and have a bit more fun. So I thought, all right. So we focused on the process. We worried about ourselves, not them. And we did it with a smile on our face. And I don't know what I can tell you, but this right here is the moment that we won our gold medal. And I thank you guys. I don't always do this, but you might never get to go to South by Southwest again. So I thought, stuff it. This right here is our gold medal. Winning this gold medal was one of the best things that ever happened to me for a couple of reasons. Firstly, to sit on top of that podium with 12 of my best mates, guys that have been through hell and back in order to get there. You know my captain who I told you about before. He was hopeful of getting drafted in the Australian Football League, and he was working over in Western Australia on the docks to earn a little bit of money before he made the move to the East Coast. And one day one of his mates accidentally, or as a joke, tied one of the boat ropes around my teammate's leg. He then docked the boat. The captain of the boat thought someone said go. The boat took off. The rope tied around my teammate's leg and it sliced his leg straight off on the dock that day. Obviously never to play football again or walk without a prosthetic. Another one of my teammates was out celebrating a rugby final in country Queensland. It was the first championship his country town had won in 20 years. He was so keen to get back to the pub to celebrate with his friends and family. He got in a car with his fiance and his best mate. His best mate was driving, was also a bit excited. They were driving a bit fast, lost control of the car and crashed. And my teammate, who was 23 years old at the time, lost his fiance and his best mate that day. And he was left paraplegic, never to walk a step again in his life. And at one point in all of our lives, we'd all given up hope. I know I had. I honestly didn't think my life was going to amount to anything. I really didn't. I didn't think I'd be sitting here in front of you today, potentially sitting here at all, if I'm honest. And to sit on top of that podium, side by side, watching that flag go up, singing our national anthem with tears running down our face, so bloody proud of one another, what we just achieved. Yeah, it was one of the best moments of my life. And 99.999% of the population that's ever lived on Earth has absolutely no idea what it's like to win a gold medal for their country. And I'm extremely honoured and humbled and lucky to be one of those people, which is pretty cool. Thank you. The second reason why it was one of the best moments of my life, I've seen my brother Zach cry twice in my life. The first time was when I hit him in the head with a hammer when I was 6. And he deserved it. The second time was when I won a gold medal. I think we as people take for granted how proud we make our friends, our families and our colleagues when we achieve things. Do you agree? Because we all just go about our jobs. But for them to say one of the best moments of their life, let alone one of the best moments of mine, pretty cool to be involved in. So hands up if you are a trustworthy person. That's pretty shitty numbers. I always thought Austin was dodgy. I'm going to pass this around, all right? Couple of things. One, I know it's heavy. Please don't tell me it's heavy. I know there'll be some smart ass like, God, it's heavy. Oh, hilarious. Secondly, if you try and steal it and sell it on eBay, I will find you. And I'll run you over with my car. Deal? Quick look, pass it on. So I'm going to overlook. Does someone want to come grab this? Chuck it down here first. Thanks, man. Now, in terms of my sporting career, I went to the 2012 Paralympic Games playing wheelchair basketball. We went there expecting to win. We were the favourites. Got to the tournament, smashed everybody. Got to the final. Who did we play? Bloody Canada. There's a photo of my teammates on the podium. I wasn't there because I was crying like a 3-year-old. And you know what? We are proud we won silver. However, in a 2-horse race, you do not win a silver medal. You lose a gold medal. Does that make sense? The last game we played, we lost. And after that, basketball became a bit of a job for me. I think it's really important to have passion and purpose in your life. If you're passionate about something, you'll be good at it. If you're good at it, you'll be successful. We all worry about house, car, money, etc. we don't ask ourselves, are we enjoying what we are doing every single day? Because hopefully we're all a long time living. And if you're a long time living, you're a long time working. So why waste your life doing something you don't enjoy? So I decided to give basketball the flick and actually went backpacking around the world in my wheelchair by myself for about 9 months. Awesome experience. Actually came to Austin back in 2013. Had a great time. I also got the name for myself as the guy that crowd surfs in his wheelchair at festivals. This is at Coachella whilst watching Jay-Z. I've got a little video demonstration for you as well. It pretty much always goes to plan. I'll tell you the same thing I told my mum. I did not end up any more disabled than I started, all right? I'm the same. I'm all good, all right? Anyway, I got back from my trip and I just didn't want to play basketball anymore. I want to get a job on TV and radio. I'll tell you why in a minute. But to get a job on TV, you got to look the part, yeah? You got to look fit and healthy. So I called my old tennis coach. I said, let's have a hit of tennis. And he said, Dil, you're not bad at this. Why don't you come back and try and do it properly? I thought, nah, I'm retired from sport. I was 22 years old at the time. And he said, train up for 6 months, enter the Australian Open Tennis Grand Slam wildcard playoff where one Aussie gets in. See how you go. I thought, all right. So I did it. I'm not sure how, but I won it. So I got to play my very first tennis Grand Slam at the Australian Open, only a few hundred metres from my house back in 2014. I didn't do very well. I got my ass kicked, actually. But safe to say, I enjoyed the experience. Not many people get to meet their heroes in life. And, you know, we're very lucky that in wheelchair tennis, it's one of the only Paralympic sports that is mainstreamed in conjunction with the able-bodied tournament. So at Wimbledon, we're there. At the Australian Open, we're there. At the US Open in New York, we're there. It's one of the only ones ever. It's pretty cool. And on my first Australian Open, I went in the locker room A, and I got in there and the locker attendant said, ah, Mr. Alcott, how you doing? I said, good, mate. Great to be here. And he said, what locker would you like? I said, oh, I'll take locker number 61 because they're all the same. And the guy goes, ooh, that's a good locker. That's a real good locker choice. I was like, cheers, mate. Yeah, fucking weirdo. Like, they're all the same. Like, he was obsessed with it. Anyway, I've got my head in my locker. I'm trying to find some string. You know, tennis players, we restring our rackets a lot. We think it helps. I probably got my head in my locker for a minute, and then I pull my head out, and then standing there completely naked, basically with his you-know-what on my shoulder, is my hero, Roger Federer. And he looks down, and he goes, hi, I'm Roger. And I go, hi, I'm Dylan. And I'm thinking, eye contact, eye contact, eye contact, eye contact. Because when you're in a wheelchair, you can't look up, you can't look down. It was just there, right? Anyway, apart from seeing Roger naked, I very much enjoyed the experience and decided to go on the World Tennis Tour full time. And it was the best decision that I ever made. And I actually recently retired 18 months ago. And some people, if you're a fan, might be sad, but don't be sad for me because I'm happy and I'm ready. And it's quite refreshing to look back on a career as a retired, washed-up athlete that I am and reflect. And in those 8 years of playing tennis, we were able to win 15 Grand Slam singles titles. We were ranked number one in the world for 5 straight years. And in 2021, we became the only male in any form of tennis, able-bodied or wheelchair, to win the Golden Slam, which is all 4 Grand Slams and the gold medal in the same year, which was pretty cool. Thank you. And people often ask me, you know, Dil, why'd you make the switch to tennis? It's for a couple of reasons. It's the most high profile of the Paralympic sports, and it's helping us change the way we view athletes with disability, right? Because we deserve, people want to come watch because it's elite. For example, the fastest serve in a wheelchair, sitting down, you ready? 130 miles an hour, 190 kilometers an hour, sitting down, no legs, pretty quick, yeah. And it's so great we can give a return on investment to broadcasters, ticket holders and sponsors because people want to watch, yeah, because it's elite, entertaining. Had some pretty high profile friends help me out. There's me and Roger. You can see what I mean about the height. Ash Barty, Rafael Nadal, had a pretty high profile doubles partner at one point as well.
Yo, I'm here with my new doubles partner, the man, Will Smith.
Yes.
Yo, Will Smith, how's your wheelchair tennis going?
Man, I'm loving it. I got skills, man. I got skills, son. I got skills. We killing this.
Yo, we got a rap name. We made a name for our crew.
Yeah, no, for our doubles tennis crew.
We're going to be wheeling and dealing.
Wheeling and dealing. And dealing. Wheeling and dealing. That's hot.
You can't make that stuff up.
You can't. You
made it up. You know what I mean? Like, it just meant to be.
You made it up, but you can't.
It's just
a part of just the depth of what you do and what you are.
Can confirm did not slap me afterwards. And has actually been a big supporter of everything that I've done, and I do hope he's doing all right. And all this stuff's funny and cool and et cetera. But, you know, it has really helped me with the second reason why I made the switch to tennis, which is to build a platform to live out my purpose. You might think my purpose is to win gold medals, Grand Slam, have Instagram followers, whatever. I honestly could not care less. My purpose is this: to change perceptions so all people with disability all around the world can get out and live the lives that they deserve to live. Because there is this stigma when you have disability that you are broken, less capable, unachieving, undateable, can't have sex, aren't consumers, don't travel, don't go to festivals, don't bank, don't have any money, don't do anything, right? And you might think the hardest part about my day is if this really good-looking elevator wasn't here to get me on stage. That'd be a pain in the ass, right? And I'd be annoyed. And we have to invest in the built environment to make things accessible. But do you know what the hardest thing to get over is? A lack of expectation of what people think you can do. And you might think, like, yeah, but Dil, you're a bit famous. Wouldn't happen to you. Last year, I was working on radio and I went and I ordered a coffee. I said, hello, can I have one almond piccolo latte? If you don't know what that is, I'm an Australian wanker. All right, so don't worry about it. All right. Anyway, I ordered this coffee and this lovely person came up and they were in tears. They were crying. I said, oh my God, are you okay? I thought they'd been robbed. And they said, I just want to let you know, it's so inspirational to see you here by yourself getting your own coffee. And I said to them, it's inspirational to see you here getting your own coffee too, right? They were just trying to be nice. They didn't have a bad bone in their body. But their expectation of me is that I can't do anything. And what if they're an HR manager? Or a recruiter, or a school teacher of a little kid with cerebral palsy, or a politician, or the head program at South by Southwest. See how that makes that hard? And that's, you know, I always used to think to myself, why do people think that I can't do anything? And one thing that I really struggled with growing up is whenever I turned on the TV or the radio or flicked the newspaper or looked on stage at an event like this, I never saw or heard anybody like me. And whenever I did, it was a road safety ad where someone speeds, has a car accident. What's the next scene? Someone like me in tears because their life's over, deterring you from speeding, telling you that being disabled is the worst case scenario outside of death. And I used to be like, that's not my life. But I used to believe that was my life. And some of you still might actually believe that's our life. That's why we need greater representation absolutely everywhere, changing that perception in our mainstream schools, in our workplaces, in our leadership positions, in our workplaces, on our boards, on our screens, on our sporting fields, because you can't be what you cannot see. And people often ask me, Dil, what was the biggest highlight of your career? And if you'd asked me 6 years ago, I would have said winning gold medals, but it wasn't. I got to play the first ever wheelchair tennis match on a Grand Slam center court at a Grand Slam singles final at Rod Laver Arena. I'm not sure why or how, but 20,000 people turned up. It was a sellout. Like 20% of the Australian population watched it on TV. But there was 500 kids in wheelchairs there. And how cool is this? This is a photo of a little girl watching someone like her on TV for the very first time. This is the reason I get out of bed. It's not to, you know, be famous or to win awards and things like that. And in order to support that, I'm always trying to think of ways to innovate, to change perception so more people get the same opportunities with disability that I've been lucky to get. One thing that we did is a few years ago, my family and I, we started our very own foundation called the Dylan Alcott Foundation. I know, shit name, unoriginal, but we can't change it now. We are set up to help young people all around the world living with disability gain confidence, fulfill their potential and achieve their dreams in whatever they want to do. We pay for equipment for young athletes to become Paralympians. We also pay for university and TAFE courses for those who can't afford it so they can get qualifications to then get employed. We also pay for people's startups for those who can't find work so they can become their own boss. We also invest in people in their vocational dreams and whatever they want to do. Because there are a lot of feel-good foundations out there, but not enough that directly invest in young people with disability. So to be able to do that is pretty cool. But obviously you need money. And our big fundraising event is an all-inclusive music festival called Ability Fest. It is a music festival just like Coachella, just like Austin City Limits, just like Barnaroo. Good accent. The only difference at our festival is we have added accessibility features so people with disability can come with their able-bodied mates and have a good time. We have platforms like this one. We have pathways. We have sign language interpreters. We have sensory areas for those who are neurodiverse. This year we had 50 bartenders who could speak in Australian Sign Language. 50, right? We had vibrating... they're called haptic suits. So for those in the deaf community, they could put them on, they could choose where they were, the main stage, the dance stage, or the silent disco, and the music would link to their suits, and their suits would vibrate to it. It was unbelievable. I wore it all day, even though I'm not deaf. I was like, this is sick. You know what I mean? And it's probably one of the events that we're most proud of. We've raised millions of bucks to support people with disability to do it. But there's one story that I like sharing, which resonates why it is important. We really get some cool people that get to come to the festival. And I had a mate, his name's James, and he's a doctor at the Royal Melbourne Hospital in the intensive care unit. And he had a young kid come in called Mark. Mark had a bit of a hectic disability. It's where your muscles break away, you can't breathe anymore. And Mark was only about 22 years old and he got put on life support. He was about to pass away. And my mate James was his doctor and he noticed that Mark had an Ability Fest wristband on, which meant he came to the festival. And James said, did you come to Ability Fest? And Mark said, yeah, why? And James said, I went as well. I grew up with Dill. And James said, he's never seen anybody's face light up like this before. And Mark said, can you do me a favour and tell Dill that that was the best day of my life? And this is a photo of Mark having a good time at Ability Fest. And do you know the reason that it was the best day of his life? That's because Mark had never been anywhere before. Not a music festival, not a sporting event, not a shopping centre, and an environment that was fully accessible for him, but more importantly, fully inclusive of him as well, and just had fun. Because accessibility, the hardware, these ramps, this elevator, this sign language, that's access. Inclusion is genuine care, leaving unconscious bias at the door, right? And treating people equal to them. That was the first time he'd ever felt that. And not long after that, unfortunately, Mark passed away. We now call our main stage Mark Stage every year in honour of him, right? Because that's why we do it. You know what? He told us that we changed his life. But really, do you know what it took? A little bit of effort, asking questions, and actually doing what you say you're going to do, and you will change people's lives. All of you. I'm talking to you. Every single person in this room. If you take the time to listen and learn and just want to do better, you will change people's lives. And you might be like, yeah, but Dill, there couldn't be that many people with disability, could there? In America, in the world, you know, you ready? There are over 1 billion people globally with some form of disability. Estimated 1.3 billion people, 25% of the population in America have some form of visible or invisible disability, right? Same in Australia, all around the world. And you know what? We deserve the same opportunities as you do to get out and live the lives that we deserve to live. But do you know why else you should do it? Do you know why else you should be inclusive? To make a shitload more money. And you laugh. But what am I? I'm a consumer just like you who wants choice and control over my life just like you, who wants opportunity to get out there and do whatever I want to do just like you, but also get out and work just like you. But those opportunities often taken away from us because people think we aren't economically involved, that we can't do anything. And it's just not true. But you've got to challenge that unconscious bias and provide us the opportunity to get out there. And you know what? If you make a shitload more money out of it, how good's that? You know, if we get out there as well and live our life, it's a win-win for everyone. But if that lived experience isn't heard, well, then we're not going to get anywhere when we reflect on what's going on. And I'm always trying to find ways to support this dream. I've got a consulting firm where we go all around the world, work with governments, corporates, industry to help them better understand the needs of people with disability. We hire 35 consultants. Every single one of them has disability. Because people always say to me, all right, Dylan, I want to hire someone with autism. What do I do? And I say, don't ask me because I'm not autistic. Ask someone who is. They deserve their voice heard. We also have a jobs platform called thefield.jobs where people with disability can match with inclusive employers and start work if they so choose, if they can work. And something that we started last year, which we're really impressed about, is something called the Shift 20 Initiative. So as we said, 20% of the world's population have some form of disability, yet less than 1% are seen on our screens globally, in advertising, in TV, and in movies. So we wanted to do something to support. It was pretty cool that so many big brands got behind us. This was our entry video into the global advertising awards. We got some people in the room that are involved. Tourism Australia is here, TikTok. So many people backed us. As seen in that video, we had my clicker's gone. Can you go next slide, please? Sorry, everyone. We really want to have an impact. And thank you. We had 600 pieces plus media all around the world. We had Forbes, New York Times. Everybody got behind it. Massive social interaction, mostly positive. Pretty much everything positive. We had an out-of-home braille for the blind and low vision. Someone's Australian first to be able to do that. As mentioned, 200 brands tried to sign up. But guess what we found out last night? It was the Asia-Pacific Ad Awards last night that were called the Golden Spikes in Singapore. And guess what? We won. Campaign of the year. How cool is that? And you know, whether you're from Australia in the house or you're from North America, whatever, we can all play a massive role in doing this. Because as mentioned in that video, the reason that we want to see ourselves in ads is because we are normal people. We eat food, we shop, we bank, we travel. Yeah, we don't see ourselves represented, right? And when you do, it's good business, but it's also socially equitable for your organisation, but for us to keep changing those perceptions. It's been one of my dreams to see more people on screen. And as mentioned, I recently retired from tennis, and one way that I've really wanted to get involved is to try and do some acting. I've got to call myself an actor now, as my agent says. One thing I struggled with so much growing up, whenever I watched a movie, it was always an able-bodied person sitting in a wheelchair. It's like, if I can't play the role you can play, well, you can't play the role that I do, right? We need more representation of people with disability, authentic stories in our films, in our TV, on our streaming services. So I've been giving it a crack, and it's been going pretty well. I just got cast in the Rocky Horror Show, you know, the theatre show, singing and dancing in my fishnets and high heels, which is cool. I am on the plane tomorrow to go back to rehearsals. So if you want to come see these disabled legs in fishnets, I'm going to be looking hot, okay? I also got cast in a show in Australia called Bump, which has gone really well. Got a little demo of what happened there.
Shauna's in a good mood, so she got everybody donuts. Donuts in the kitchen today. Everyone, I am in love with all of you. You can all work from home tomorrow and free high fives in my office if you're looking for them. Love you.
Donuts are killed. Probably poisoned.
You gonna have one?
Yes. Are you?
No. I'm disabled enough. Good luck there. I'm loving it. I'm loving the acting stuff. So if anyone knows anyone, get me in the roles. Let's win an Oscar. I'm keen. But obviously, it sounds like, you know, I don't care about sport. Obviously, I do. It gave me that platform to get out. But, you know, we really created a great ecosystem where we're just constantly trying to challenge perceptions. And we want you all to come on the journey with us, to do it together. And I'm very lucky that, you know, sport really gave me that platform. It gave me that community where I felt like I felt loved, where I felt like, you know, I was a part of something. And I was very lucky, as I said, in 2016 to become one of a handful of athletes to win 2 gold medals in 2 different sports across 2 different games. And look at this one. Bought the other one. How good's this? Can everyone hear this? This is the one from Rio. Can you hear this? All the medals have ball bearings in them. 28 in a gold, 22 in a silver, 12 in a bronze. Anyone want to guess why? Think about accessibility. as you said, it's like people like you can tell. So for the blind and low vision, they all make a different sound. So they know what colour they got. And it was awesome on the podium watching the one who won gold, whoever won gold was like, yep, yep, mine sounds better than yours. Yeah, it was great. They actually were. Because they obviously all the medals have Braille on them as well. I'll get this one out as well if you guys want to have a quick look. Now, before we take a couple of questions, I want to tell you one more quick story about, you know, why I love the Paralympic Games. So I call the Olympic Games the crappy warm-up event for the Paralympics, right? Because it's always before us. And I got one story I like sharing that separates it. The best thing about the Games is the amazing athletes with incredible stories doing things you never imagined possible. So the best thing about Olympics, Paralympics is one, winning gold medals. Two is the free food, right? Unbelievable. It is 24 hours a day, all you can eat free stuff. Pizza, pasta, steak, sushi. And then down the end, 24 hours a day, all you can eat free, McDonald's. Right? So when I won this gold medal, I ordered 250 McNuggets just because I could, to be honest. Anyway, I'm in the food hall and I see this dude and he's carrying his buffet tray of food with his mouth. I was like, check out this guy. Why is he using his mouth? You know, and I had a closer look and this person had no arms from the shoulders down, both sides. So double arm amputee above the shoulder. And I was like, wow, I'd never seen that before. How is he going to eat his food? Is he going to face plant in his rice? Is he going to have a carer? I have no idea. I want to watch. So I followed him, not too creepily, but I sat just far enough away, and puts down his tray, takes off his shoes, walks over to the middle of the food hall where you pick up your cutlery, and with his toes, he picks up a pair of takeaway bamboo chopsticks, the kind you get at your local Asian cuisine restaurant, gets back to his seat, unwraps the chopstick paper with his toes, cracks them open between his toes on his foot, puts them between his toes on his right foot and starts feeding himself his rice using chopsticks with his feet. Now, I want everybody in the room, if you can, I've got a good excuse, so I can't do this, but I want all of you to put your hands above your head. Put your hands up. Now put your right foot to your mouth without bringing your hands down. Anyone? Pretty, not bad, pretty hard, yeah? Now, I can barely use chopsticks with my hands. Couldn't imagine using your feet. Pretty hard. Or, like, imagine brushing your teeth, opening a car door. Or what about, like, hugging your wife or your husband or your partner? Or holding your firstborn child? That would suck, yeah? It'd be hard. And if this person sat at home and did nothing with their life, who the hell are we to tell them to go do anything? Because on paper, their life must be really tough. But the most important lesson that I've learned in my life is this, the importance of a positive perception. Because it's not the events in life that dictates the life that you live. It's how you perceive them that determines what path that you take. Because two very similar people can have the same thing happen on the same day and live two completely different lives, right? Because it comes down to this. It comes down to our decisions and not our conditions. Because we don't always have control over our conditions, do we? But we do have control over our decisions and our mindsets and how we view things. And you know what? I've won a couple of gold medals. I'm very lucky. Michael Phelps, the swimmer, he won a few. Amazing athletes with incredible stories. Well, this guy with no arms, you ready? He's got 4 gold medals, broken 4 world records, and he swims the 100-meter backstroke in 1 minute and 12 seconds without any arms. Like 12 seconds slower than people with arms. Unbelievable, yeah? And the reason I tell you this story is this dude and myself are just two people that looked at the cards that we were dealt and just became the best versions of ourselves. And I'm not trying to say you always have to be positive in everything that you do because we all go through some shit, agreed? I'm not always positive, right? I would love to have a kid one day and I'm going to have to ask my brother to teach him how to kick a football because I can't do it. That sucks. I live in a beautiful part of the world in Australia where there's lots of beaches. And when I go to the beach, whether I'm in LA, whether I'm anywhere, I've got to sit 50 metres away on the path while I watch every single one of you walk on the sand and jump in the water, something I've never been able to do, nor will I. That sucks as well. But for every one thing that I can't do, there are tens of thousands of other things that I can do. And I get sent a lot of stuff about stem cell research. Would I do it to be able to walk? And there's no money in the world you could ever pay me to do it. Everyone's different, but that's how I feel. Because I used to say the Dylan in the wheelchair and the Dylan that walks, same Dylan. But that's crap. Because the Dylan in a wheelchair is a much better Dylan version of any other Dylan that could have ever lived. And I'm easily the luckiest person in this room, if not South by Southwest in general, if not the world, to be living the... I mean, Ryan Gosling is pretty good, actually. Maybe second. To be living the life that I live, and I honestly, I would not change that for the world. But there are nearly a billion people who probably don't feel the same way that I do, right? And it's up to all of us to keep doing that. And if there are three things I want you to take away to be able to help make our society a more inclusive and accessible place for people with disability, it's these things. Firstly, challenge your unconscious bias and lift your expectations of what people, of what you think people with disability can do. Secondly, the best way to learn is to listen to lived experience, right? If you want to speak about somebody at a table, one, they need a seat at that table, but who cares about a seat if they're not listened to at that table as well and actually integrated and involved in it? And thirdly, most importantly, you got to open up the doors. You got to provide opportunities, right? There's no point wanting to do better if when push comes to shove, you keep that door closed, right? If you do those three things, we can become redundant. That's my dream. I want to be redundant. I really, really do. I don't want to get up here and talk about it anymore, right? I want to go to the pub and just have a few beers. But until then, I'll keep challenging and do it. But as I said, there are a lot of things you can go to at South by Southwest. And I really mean this. Thank you so much for coming today. Hopefully you learned something. If not, hope you found it funny. If not, at least it's fucking over. Am I right? We can go watch some music. However, I think we've got to be, how are we going? We've got 5 minutes of questions? Yeah, 5, 10 minutes. If anyone has a question, please jump up to the microphone. You can yell at me as well. I can hear you all. If not, we can get photos. If not, we can all go have a margarita. Amazing. Oh, question. Great. Oh, lots of questions we're on. Hello. Oh, only rule, just got to say, introduce yourself. Hello, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much. This was an awesome presentation and you're very funny.
Thank you.
So I have a 13-year-old adopted brother that was born with a missing limb. And you mentioned when you had that moment of kind of going through feeling hard on your, being hard on yourself and going through the struggles. What would you kind of say now to that, you know, 13, 14-year-old self to get out of that cycle of also bullying?
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. One, I would say that it's okay to be different. And, you know, look at us right now. We've all got different clothes on. We've got different hairstyles. We live in different places. Yet when you have a big difference, everyone shies away from it, right? And that's what I want to. I wanted to be like my brother. I wanted to fit in, right? But I couldn't be them. So as soon as I started becoming proud of who I was, right, my life changed. But I would also tell him this. I want you to tell him about me, show him my Instagram. He'll be like, wow, that guy's killing it. It took me 28 years to fully feel worthy of love and worthy of my disability. I'm 32. So it wasn't like that, right? And I'm being honest with you. So it is going to take time. And my favourite bit of advice for him, for every one dickhead that gives him a hard time, there are 10,000 other people that are worth your time, that will love you for who you are. But we as people worry about that one person who said that one negative thing, right? Whether, and that's, that goes for all of us. Whether you go on Twitter, someone writes something about your company, you go, what have I done? It's like, no. They don't know you, right? If your little brother is a good person, he's trying to be a good person, you know, he'll be fine. And then, you know, the special sauce in all this for me is that everyone goes to me, what are your biggest strengths, Dylan, right? And people love because you're disabled, they always go, resilience, grit, all these bullshit words, right? Mine are, one, I work my ass off. I really, really work hard because I'm passionate about my purpose. But secondly, which will help your brother, the power in authenticity, the power in being yourself. Because people relate to you if you are being your authentic self. And if that means he's an amputee, be an amputee, because you are, right? And people will buy into that, right? And thirdly, the power in vulnerability. The power in asking for help and the power in saying you're not okay. And he might not want to talk about it, but please keep asking about it. Because my brother and my family's biggest regret is they knew it was going on and they didn't say anything because they didn't know what to do, right? So keep going. And if you ever need anything from me, please reach out. Great question. Thanks for being vulnerable with that as well. Hello, brother.
Hey, Dylan. Great presentation. Thank you. I think that unconscious bias is there. Like, you know, we don't realise just how often it is there. But this presentation has really made me feel quite liberated because I've always felt beholden to my Apple Watch, and it's just told me to stand up It's time to stand up. And I can turn around and say, fuck you, that's not very nice of Apple. So thank you.
Thank you, brother. And you're so right. Like, for people like yourself who, you know, don't know how to engage, what happens is there's a timidness to make a mistake with people with disability, but that timidness to make a mistake then actually discriminates because you don't want to get it wrong. Guess what? I get shit wrong all the time. You are going to get stuff wrong. That's okay. As long as you do better next time, right? But a scaredness to get involved then actually means we get left out of that economic pool of involvement or whatever it is. And another bit of advice, if you want to find out something about your able-bodied coworker or your able-bodied friend or that able-bodied person going for a job interview, what do? You ask them a question. Yet with disability, I'm not saying roll up to someone at the pub and say, get a champion, what happened to you? None of that. Like, you've got to have a good rapport. But of course you can ask a question if you do it in the right way, if it's going to help make a more inclusive society, whatever it is. Thanks, mate. Hello.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Thank you for coming today.
No, my pleasure. I'm so excited to be here. I love the fact that you're focusing on representation. I am a black female multiple sclerosis warrior who's also been a DJ for 25 years. And trust and believe, when I walk up to the booth, the whole place is looking at me like, oh my God, what's she gonna do? And then when I start to do my thing, they're like, aha, that's
love
what
that.
She's doing.
Can I ask, what kind of music do you play?
I play house music.
Oh,
Hey,
we've got to book you for Ability Fest. Will you come to Australia?
So this is why we're talking, my friend.
Okay, go. Yes, I like it a lot.
I would love to play. I open for Duran Duran in June, so I got some chops.
Oh, she's good.
I got some chops. Thank you. I think it's great. I think I love that I saw the ads and I was crying a little bit up there because it's important for us to see us. So thank you.
I appreciate that. And thanks for being vulnerable, Sam. You're a bloody legend.
Of course.
And we've got to bring Ability Fest over here, maybe. I went to Coachella. One of my best mates, I got Dom Dollar, a big DJ, and he played it, and the accessibility, the head of Coachella was there, and he's like, oh, we heard you were here, we copied your stuff from Ability Fest. I was like, you bastard, didn't even give me a ticket. But that's what I want. We don't own this space, we don't own ads, we don't own Accessible Festival. We are just setting a gold medal standard, we just want everyone to copy, right, to make it a more inclusive place. But we'll get you out, it's going to be in October, so we'll chat, all right? Beautiful.
Hi, Dylan.
Hey.
I've got a disabled sister, and the thing that I really notice is I just think she's actually extra special. She's just the most amazing person, but so many people don't see that. And as I've got closer to her, because she was institutionalised as a child and I went and found her, it's like you feel like there's this special world that people are missing out on. And that's not meant to be condescending. It's more like she's just, you know, she's really unique, but most people don't see it. So how, you know, it's hard. It's sort of like, oh, I want to have a disabled friend or I want to get involved. I think it's quite hard to know how to do that if you want to sort of take a step on inclusivity. And I know when I had my company, I made sure that we gave those opportunities. But just, you know, some thoughts on how to get more involved in a way that is not condescending but has
impact.
Yeah,
no, you're not. If you're coming from a good place, you're not condescending at all. And thank you for getting up here and saying that as well. I think the best part, which I always say, is like we go around the world talking to corporates, like, oh, we actually did this awesome thing for accessibility inclusion, and we now hire, you know, 50 people with autism. I'm like, did you tell anyone that? And they're like, oh no, we can't tell anyone that. I'm like, why not? Like it's awesome. Right, and it makes their business better too. Right, it's a competitive advantage when you are more inclusive, when you have an inclusive culture, when you have differing opinions, different, you know. And people with disability bring that. We are natural born problem solvers because we have to be. We have a high work ethic. We love getting out there and having a crack. But what you're talking about is being an ally. We also need allies too, right? Not people that speak on behalf of us, but speak with us, and that is the difference. And I think that is the best way to do it. It'd be like, we call it co-designing. You and I, it's not me telling you how to do it, you telling me how to do it, so let's do it together, right? And that's when you have the biggest impact, because we learn off each other, as in people with disability and able-bodied people, but the community and society learns most of all as well. So yeah, people go, what's the best way to do it? I say, we're having a crack. Just having a crack. and starting, because you'll figure out how to do it from there. Thank you for asking. Appreciate it. Anyone else? Yes, mate. Hey, bro. How are you? Do you want to do it? Go on. Yeah, I got you. I'll repeat if I got.
How do you find your customers? You know, like, are we just rare, or and the type that are ready to deal with the discomfort and get out there? And where are they? You know, and I guess when I look around, it's like I know that he is big and present, but how do we get people out?
Great question. Yeah, for, you know, I always compare it to like going on a date, right? You go on a date once, get knocked back, twice knocked back, three times knocked back. You're going to go a fourth time? That's what people with disabilities like. Job interview, they turn to piss off, you're out. You're like, why bother? So we need to re-hardwire society, not just everybody, people to get more inclusive, but also show that if you are a disabled person who's going to go to uni and get a degree, you're going to get a job, right? Tell them, if you come to this bar, you're going to get let in. Right? If you come apply as a photographer at South by Southwest, you're going to get an opportunity, right? But if they just walk around and you see a bunch of able-bodied people, why are you and I going to go out there? And I think what we've been able to do in Australia, we as in, you know, Dylan Enterprises, I say we a lot, can you tell? Because I get the credit. Everyone goes, no, you're Australian of the Year. You won Wimbledon. Like, we did that, like, as a team. But what we were able to do is, especially around, like, ads and inclusion and that, it has become so much more normalised. Which is the best way to do it, mate. Because if you normalise it, everyone can be normal, and that mainstream representation is key. We were super lucky. There's a marketing company in Australia called Jemba, and they wrote the like top 20 most marketable Australians. Number one, a guy called Chris Hemsworth. Do you know who he is? He's kind of hot. Number two, Margot Robbie, superstar. Number three, Hugh Jackman, Wolverine. Number four, guy in a wheelchair. It was me. That's pretty cool, you know what I mean, right? And that's not me, that's all of us doing that. But what that then means, it really impacts kids, the next generation. It impacts people seeing that, going, oh, I'm going to give that a chance now, you know? But it can't just be a select few. It can't be the five or six of us in the room. It's got to be everyone, right? You might not want to be a Paralympian broadcaster. You might just want to be a great mum or dad. Or you might just want to go to the shops. So you might want to do whatever. Everybody deserves that. And to be able to change that is the best way to do it through that mainstream rep. Great question, brother. We done? Oh, here. No. Fuck it. We can do what we want. Is there another one? Is this the last one in this room? Yeah, last one. Nah, go for it. We got time.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you for the representation. Second of all, I have a national mental health campaign coming out next month, and I'm kind of terrified to be that out there. Do you have any tips for how to deal with that much exposure?
Hello. Can do. As I said, one big thing, especially with online stuff, right? I always describe it like this. When people say things on TikTok or Twitter or Facebook or whatever, they don't know me. They know what they think they know is me, right? And their talk is irrelevant because I know that I'm a good person who tries my best every day, right? One of the hard parts, and I'll be honest with you, reading comments from the disabled community is hard because you're like, I'm just trying to do my best.
That's what I'm scared of.
Yeah. And
well, not just that.
No. But because, you know, it's tough. It's tough. And what I often got was, you don't speak on behalf of me. I said, I know. I just talk about my own lived experience. I'm not some disability Dalai Lama who's got all the answers. Like, I'm just making it up as I go as well. You know what I mean? Like, trying to figure it out. But don't let that deter you from doing the right thing. And it sounds like your program is. And any, let's swap details up for this and chat. And if you need a call, sounding board, because you're going to go through some hard times, but trust me, there'll be way more good times. And you're going to help a lot of people in the process. So good job. Round of applause.
Thank
for Lex.
You.
Everyone, if anyone needs anything, please reach out. These are my socials. You're all bloody legends. What a great crowd. Everyone was listening and not on their phones and all that kind of stuff. I'm really grateful for it. Thank you so much for coming to listen. And I'll see you back in America very soon. Love you all. Thank you.